Progress Report 16. July 14th. It was a bad day to go out to Warren, gray and drizzly, and that may account for the depression that grips me when I think about it. Or perhaps I'm kidding myself, and it was the idea of possibly being sent there that bothered me. I borrowed Bert's car. Alice wanted to come along, but I had to see it alone. I didn't tell Faye I was going. It was an hour and a half drive out to the farmland community of Warren, Long Island, and I had no trouble finding the place. A sprawling gray estate revealed to the world only by an entrance of two concrete pillars flanking a narrow side road and a well-polished brass plate with the name Warren State Home and Training School. The roadside sign said 15 miles per hour, so I drove slowly past the blocks of buildings looking for the administrative offices. A tractor came across the meadow in my direction, and in addition to the man at the wheel, there were two others hanging on the rear. I stuck out my head and called, "Can you tell me where Mr. Winslow's office is?" The driver stopped the tractor and pointed to the left and ahead. "Main Hospital, turn left and bear to your right." I couldn't help noticing the staring young man riding at the rear of the tractor, hanging onto a handrail. He was unshaven, and there was the trace of an empty smile. He had on a sailor's hat, with the brim pulled down childishly to shield his eyes, although there was no sun out. I caught his glance for a moment, his eyes wide, inquiring, but I had to look away. When the tractor started forward again, I could see in the rear-view mirror that he was looking after me, curiously. It upset me, because he reminded me of Charlie. I was startled to find the head psychologist so young, a tall, lean man with a tired look on his face, but his steady blue eyes suggested a strength behind the youthful expression. He drove me around the grounds in his own car and pointed out the recreation hall, hospital, school, administrative offices, and the two-story brick buildings he called cottages where the patients lived. "I didn't notice a fence around Warren," I said. "No, only a gate at the entrance and hedges to keep out curiosity seekers." "But how do you keep them from wandering off, from leaving the grounds?" He shrugged and smiled. "We can't, really. Some of them do wander off, but most of them return."
"Don't you go after them?"
He looked at me as if trying to guess what was behind my question. "No. If they get into trouble, we soon know about it from the people in town, or the police bring them back."
"And if not?"
"If we don't hear about them or from them, we assume they've made some satisfactory adjustment on the outside. You've got to understand, Mr. Gordon, this isn't a prison. We are required by the state to make all reasonable efforts to get our patients back, but we're not equipped to closely supervise 4,000 people at all times. The ones who manage to leave are all high moron types. Not that we're getting many of those anymore. Now we get more of the brain-damaged cases who require constant custodial care. But the high morons can move around more freely, and after a week or so on the outside, most of them come back when they find there's nothing for them out there. The world doesn't want them, and they soon know it."